Hello and welcome to this week's Green Shoots, a history of Irish football with me, Caelan Kerwin. No Gary Spain this week, as in just a few moments I'll be chatting with League of Ireland legend Pat Byrne in part one of a part two interview about his football life, including playing in the US, winning titles with Bows, being part of that incredible Shamrock Rovers team of the 80s, and managing Shells, the club he grew up supporting, to a league and FAI Cup title. A fascinating in-depth interview, so stay with us for that. Remember, you can listen to our podcast on Spotify, Apple, YouTube, and Amazon Music, as well as a host of other platforms too. Share the show on your social media platforms to help others learn about the history and heritage of Irish football. Now, my guest on this episode of the podcast is one of the all-time greats of the game. Pat Byrne's journey in football has been varied, from Ireland to the United States, to Leicester City and Hearts in Scotland, and back home again to play. Success followed him almost everywhere he went. 6 League of Ireland titles, 4 FAI Cups, an English second division title as a player, and won the League and Cup with Shelburne and brought Kilkenny City into the Premier Division 2 as a manager. I'm delighted to get the opportunity to talk about his footballing life. Pat Byrne, you are very welcome to the show.
Thanks very much, Ken. Yeah, delighted to be on it. Thank you.
Fantastic to have you. Can you give us a little insight into, I suppose, where your love of football kind of comes from?
Well, I was in a family of 5 boys and 1 girl, and we all 3 of us played football, 4 of us played football really, and 1 or 2 didn't. And then my sister, she was as mad as a brush. We'd only 1 sister. She was the oldest, but she was into all types of sports as well. She was great. So it was a sporty family. We were Reds mad. We were mad Shelburne supporters. And we always used to meet our cousins at games and so forth. And it was great. You're like, I was playing football for Rangers in Bushy Park. And my dad then would check me. We'd go on the bus then over to Talca Park or whatever, meet up with our cousins and uncles and so forth. And that's the way it was. It was great times. So, and then I go and sign for Bows and Shamrock Rovers. So I can tell you stories about them.
Was it strange to kind of go and do that in terms of, like, when you look back on it as a Shelburne kind of lad, that would come back later on in your career as well, but to find yourself at places like Shamrock Rovers as well?
Yeah, it was like, I was actually supposed to sign for Shelburne, and I had trained with Shelburne down in Sandy Mountain around there, you know, and Jerry Doyle was coming up to sign me, and Billy Young arrived at my house with Mick Bourne, and they persuaded me otherwise, and I wasn't... I was kind of I was in a bad book for a few of the cousins and things, a few of the uncles. So I it went on for a while, you know. So, but the fact that I signed for Bowles starting off wasn't too bad. Once it wasn't Shamrock Rovers, you know what I mean. So that was okay. So they spoke to me for a while, but then when I didn't go to Shelburne and then went to Rovers, that was another time. So it was but then I ended up with Shells eventually, but sure, look, that was we'll talk about that.
And talk to us about I suppose growing up with football as well. When you were a kid, did you idolize League of Ireland players, and did you have heroes when you were growing up?
Oh yeah, because especially when in Shells, you know, Eric Barber, there were so many different players. I'm still trying to think of all the Paddy Roach was in goal as well, you know, and they were great, you know. They were your heroes, Ben Hannigan, all them type of people. And it was just the whole buzz of, you know, you're looking in through the mesh, the word mesh, because we were so small, you were behind the goals, you know, that sort of way. Yeah. And you were looking at your heroes and you were looking at the goals, and it was the whole thing. And I suppose when the lights were on as well like that, it was incredible. It was like, you know, it's like Wembley, I suppose, you know, that's what we thought of as, you know. So, but I started off in road leagues in Walthamstown. that was where I kind of started off with. And then, because you couldn't play ordinary football, this is about 8 or 9, you had to play under 12. So that was the only league you could play in, under 12s. That was the earliest stage. So I signed for Rangers up in Bushy Park, and I played up there for years. I used to cycle there from Walthamstown and played. And that was the start of me, really.
So you're there at Rangers for a number of years. How did you end up at Bohemians then in 74?
Noel Quinn was our manager. Unfortunately, he's dead since. Noel was one of the best people in the world. He was brilliant at, you know, picking people for a team. And I had some great friends and still have in Rangers from that time. And it was just, when I was playing away, I got a trial away to Wolves when I was 15. And at the time you went over, Caleb, you know, it was really weird. Like 15 years of age, you're traveling on a plane on your own. You go over to Wolverhampton. I had never seen an Asian kind of person before, you know, in a sort of way.
Yeah.
The smell was totally different. Everything was different. And I was put in these digs with this family, and they were very nice. They're lovely. But I know you had nothing to do, you know, in a sort of way. You were 15 years of age, and you had nothing to do. You were left there, kind of get on with it. And I always remember I was sitting in the dressing room the first day, and there was gear above my head, and nobody had told me what to do. Then the manager or coach, whatever he was at the time, he came in and then he said, "Come on, get on, what's wrong with you? Get ready." I said, What do I do? What do you mean, what to do? There's your gear. So you're kind of on the back foot straight away, and you're kind of saying, "Jesus, hold on." So anyway, got the gear on, went out, and do you think he passed the ball to you? Not a chance. And that was my first introduction to kind of people want to make it, to kind of look after themselves, and it was kind of dog eat dog. And but like once you got the ball, it was okay. That was all right, you know. But everybody was on trial, so it was, as I said to you, it was dog eat dog, and you kind of did your best. That's where it was.
It must have been a big culture shock to you, because by the sounds of it, you had a manager at Rangers who did kind of look after you and make sure that things were good, and you know, trying to work with you to bring your skill level up, etc. Whereas it seemed when you arrived at Wolves, it was like, you know, yeah, here, go play, and that was about it. And you either, as you say, you sink or swim.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's what it was. When you look back now, and this time, you know, given the way things are now, it was weird, when you say the least, really. What the gas thing about was I was offered a contract. I was offered to sign. And I always remember going and saying to me, Mom, I don't want to go back there. I just thought, my dad probably would have been delighted, but he said, "Man, I don't want to go there. It's just not me, you know." So we declined, and it was the best thing probably I ever did, but because I wasn't happy there. And I think when it just shows there was so many players, and people say the rate of people not, you know, signing or getting a contract, getting through, you can actually see why, you know, because you were living in a different environment. Even though I got off the car, I was lucky. I don't know why. I don't know how. Anyway, there was so many things against you, you know. First of all, the fact you wouldn't give the ball. Secondly, probably because you're Irish to a degree. And you know, obviously you're going over there taking their place, you know, or their position or their contract. So that's the way it was. And I was just glad to be home then, really. When that was over, I was happy. So it was back to my own team.
But is that something that maybe that kind of stuck with you for the rest of your career, in that you, throughout your career, you kind of found yourself in really good teams, and then when you managed as well, you managed really good teams. Is that something that maybe stuck with you from that experience where you kind of went, look, you know, I know what it takes now to be part of a team, to make sure that everybody's on board, to make sure we're all kind of going in that one direction, and that, you know, you shouldn't feel like an outsider. Nobody should feel like they're outside the group. And maybe that's something that that did stick with you for the rest of your career from that kind of experience.
It did, yeah. I would say definitely was the case, yeah. But I also had a great group of fellas in Rangers, and we're still friends to this day. But it did shake me to a degree, all right, you know. And I was the one thing I suppose it said to me was, okay, I probably can do this. I always remember saying, looking at Match of the Day, and someone says, how did you kind of feel that you could do this? And I said, well, I looked at Match of the Day, and not that it was great, but I remember looking at Match and I said, geez, I think I could do that, you know what I mean? And maybe in a stupid or childish sort of way, but, you know, I think I can do that. And I love football so much, that's all I ever did. And but we played on the roads, and we used to play against, you know, against the curbs and everything else. And then the goals were the gates. And sometimes if we couldn't kick the ball against the gate, just in case it was late at night, you had to, the lights above and the staunching on that. So if you could chip the ball onto that, and that was a goal, you know. So that's the way it was played. It was nonstop. Like, that's all I ever did at that time, was play football. And I played Gaelic as well for my school in Drimda Castle with Jerry Ryan and Kevin Moore. And we had a great team in the school. Tony Buckley as well. Tony Buckley had gone to Derby County as a goalkeeper. And but we also played, you know, for the school as well in Gaelic. So that was another that was a learning time as well, because I love playing, but I had to miss a game because of I had played soccer. Just these two games clashed, and I was supposed to play in a semi-final for the school in Balldoyle. And I was playing in Bushy Park that same morning, that Saturday morning. And I always remember Brother Duffy coming to me on the Friday. And I said to him, I said, look, Brother Duffy, I won't be there tomorrow. And he says, Bourne, you'll be there tomorrow. And I was kind of shaking, and I said, because you know the way they didn't call you, Pat, they called you Bourne, or they called you Conway, or wherever you were. And he says to me, no, you'll be there tomorrow. And I went home, and the same thing again. Said to me, mom, I said, mom, I says, because we only lived across the road from it, yeah. You know, Drimda Castle, walking on my road. So I went home for me dinner and our lunch, whatever it was. It was dinner and lunch. That's all you got anyway. So she says to me, what do you want to do? And I said, man, I want to play Bushy Park, so Rangers. So, okay, well, you go and do that. So anyway, I went and did it. And I went into the school on the Monday morning. And it was only, I didn't even put my bum in the seat. And next thing, Brother Duffy comes in, Bourne, top of the class, you know. I went top of the class, and they gave me six of the best. Oof. And he wasn't just hitting me, he couldn't have got the thing higher, any higher, to hit me with a big what do you call them? It was
a switch, was it?
The leather one, you know. So, and he got me on my veins and things like that as well. But I wouldn't give in. I felt like saying, "Jeez," you know. But that was the sixth best I got for that. And I always remember, you know. And the mad thing about it was about 2 months later, 3 months later, probably. We got to a final of another thing in Croke Park, and we won. And the first person that hugged me was Brother Duffy, you know. I thought he was going to strangle me.
It's interesting that you kind of say that, because when we had Owen Hand on the show before, and kind of his inspiration for like becoming a footballer was, you know, he had a Christian brother who absolutely wanted him to not play football. So that really kind of pushed him to play football, to, you know, maybe give two fingers up to the authority and stuff like that as well. And also, apparently his mother had a word as well, which probably helped too. But it's interesting that the similarities there between, you know, somebody saying you can't do this, and then you go, you know what, this is what I want to do, so I'm going to go do it.
Yeah, that's a it's funny you should say it, because the way after I got to six of the best, and I remember going home at lunch here, and my mom knew straight away there's something wrong, you know, and she says, what happened, you know? And my mom was the quietest woman in the world. She's very, very quiet. I says, what happened? I said, well, I got six of the best. You what? Okay. So didn't say anything else. Didn't say a word to me. Anyway, I went back to school, and I'm only sitting down again, and next thing, the young lad came in, Pat Bourne, got to go down to the office. I said, oh, Jesus, here we go. I'm going to get another six, you know what I mean, or something, you know what I mean? So I walked into, I was shit myself, to be honest. I walked in, I said, what's going to happen here, you know? Especially when this was a British Lou we were going into, and he was a fair man, but he was kind of fierce, you know? And I walked in, and my mom's there in her best coat, you know, and her hat on, and she has her bag. It was surreal. I always, even to this day, I always remember, geez, what's mom doing here, you know? What's going on here? It was mad. It was in a different place. And he said, oh, Jesus. So anyway, I sat down, and Brother Duffy's off in the corner. Brother Slew's behind the desk. My mom's sitting down here with her coat, best coat on, best hat on, best bag she had. And so I'm sitting. Brother Shalou says to me, so I told him the story, what happened. Okay. And okay, that's grand, okay. And then my mom stands up. My mom stands up. I can't believe it. My mom is going to stand up. Stands up and says, if you ever, ever touch my son again, it will not be me we're dealing with. It'll be his father. He should have no... And my mom doesn't say these things. My mom doesn't say anything like this, you know what I mean? And she was my hero after that. Then again, you know, sort of way. So it was unreal. But it was it's a story that stays with me for many things, you know, because it was at the time then that I was allowed to just kind of do what I want to do as terms of football or board or whatever. And Elliot and playing my soccer was the most important, you know.
Yeah. Everything always changes when mums get involved. There's no out here. There's no way anybody's getting away with anything.
And she was so strong that day. It was, and like my mom wouldn't go out from one end of the week to the other, really. She'd have her apron. Anytime you see a mom, she'd have her apron on when you got up first thing in the morning, and when you were going to bed at night, it was more or less the same thing, you know. So,
and so. How does it come about that you end up at Bohemians then and playing in that team as well in the very early part of your I suppose your senior career?
Yeah, it was as I said to you there, Kevin Moran, Jerry Ryan, and myself played for Rangers, and as I said, we were supposed to go to Shelbourne, and then Billy Young came up and asked the manager to sign the three of us. Billy Young came up, said, could he sign? We signed and went to Dalyman. And the reason it was the Dalyman too was because the pitch was so lovely at the time, and it was obviously our international ground.
Yeah.
And to be able to play there every second week was huge. So that was a big thing for me. And I was lucky enough to sign. I signed a professional contract that year in Bow. So it was great. I was getting a few bob, and I always remember getting a few quid signing on. And we had a caravan down in Rush, and my dad was looking to upgrade it and things like that. So the few bob I got, I bought him the new. New place, so we got a new caravan. That's what we got out of Bowles at that time. So it was great, and we had many a great time in it. So it was very much well worth it.
Yeah, and it's interesting that I suppose that you know, going back to our earlier story, that was the first thing that you wanted to do was to do something for your family, for your parents as well. when you got the few bob, when you started making football, as well. This even throughout your career and playing football, you know, crossing over to England and stuff like that. Did family play a huge part in your life, even throughout your career?
Oh, huge! Yeah, my family was like everything, because like it was the biggest support. Like, you'd always have your ups and downs, and they were always there for everything. So my brother Terry played for Sherwood in around the same time, and I remember we played against each other, you see, and I made a bad tackle on Terry. I was given out to them when I went home, but it was, yeah, the family is so important, you know, and it was great because my dad loved it so much, and then obviously my uncles and things like that, so it was a huge part of us, you know, and but it was great because you got to meet so many people and you got to go to different places, and it was all new to us, you know, that sort of way. It was a kind of, I just love football so much. I remember reading about somebody about, you know, doing these extra runs and things. I used to run from my house up to Red Cow and back on a Sunday morning on my own and things like that. You know what I mean? And you did things like that, you know, just to make yourself a little bit better. But the fellas we played against too, on opposite my house, there was a big green, and there was a match there every night in the summer. Like everybody playing against each other, and it first of all, like when you came across, if you were late getting across, you had to be put in goal. You know, you're in goal. That's how it was.
last person goes in goal.
Yeah. That's the kind of. And then once somebody else came, you were back out, then you were okay, you know. But that was my first introduction, because I was playing against lads much older than me and things like that. And they were brilliant, the Finnegans. I was lucky in, you know, the way in life about you kind of where you grow up and who you grow up with and things like that. But I was lucky with people around me, and we're great neighbours and we're great friends and that, you know what I mean? It was great. I love where we lived, you know, that sort of way. Lovely people, you know.
You join Bowes and you win the league in your very first season at the club. Did you think to yourself, well, brilliant, this is how it's always going to be. This is how it works, yeah? You turn up and you play and you win leagues.
Yeah, you do, and you're kind of naive. Do you kind of say, yeah, this is going to be easy enough, you know? But I always remember we went down to play my first game away. We were playing down in Cork, and Turg O'Connor was very good to Johnny Fulham, Mick Smith, Eamon Gregg. You know, there's loads of people. They were great here. But I always remember going on the train, and Mick Smith comes to me and say, "No, watch yourself down here today. You know, they'll kick you. You get kicked anyway. You know, these will kick you. You know, and so there was a big rivalry between the two sides. So when we went out, anyway, I was playing on the right wing at the time, and ball was played to me. I knocked the left foot, and I crossed the ball, and Torla comes in and sticks the ball in the back of the net with his header. Just only after about 10 minutes. And I said, geez, this is great, you know? It's great. So I tried to do something similar about another 50 minutes later. But next thing I find myself flying in the air. I said, what happened there? And next thing I hit the ground, a big toad. Jesus Christ, what happened there? Anyway, the fullback comes over to me, and he said to the referee, sorry about that, referee. But I smiled at the referee, sorry about that, missed time, that ref, sorry about that. And as he's picking me up, he's pinching me. And he said to me at the same time, if you ever fucking do that again, boy, I'll kick you into the fucking stand.
Back then, I'd say when referees were rather slim on giving out yellow cards and stuff like that as well, was it?
God, you'd have been sent to jail for this one. You know what I mean? I swear to God. The fella sent me, it was like assault. You know, and that's where there was a lot of games like that. You know, you had to look after yourself and things like that. But it was all honest stuff. There was no real badness in it, you know. It was, you know, you had to look after yourself. It was just the way the game was.
Yeah, well, and it's something like we talked about it in our podcast about the League of Ireland in the 1980s, and we'll get to it later. But we were talking about that Shamrock Rovers team, and you know, Gary, our in-house football historian, was basically saying that, you know, people like the difference between this Shamrock Rovers team and probably ones that had come previous were the players like yourself and others were well able to look after themselves, as in, you know, if they got a bit of a kicking or they got shoved into the stands and stuff like that, they get back up and they move on, or they give it back, you know, somewhere down the line as well during the match. So that kind of thing was, I suppose, really important, I suppose, in 70s and 80s football, wasn't it? That you had to be able to kind of, you have to be able to take it, but you also had to kind of give it out when the time was necessary too.
Yeah, you had to do that. That was very important, because you would be seen then as kind of not up to the task, for a better word, you know. But there was one occasion actually that happened to me, and I got kicked early on. I said, that's okay. So I wait me time and whatever, you know. So that was okay. And we were winning 1-0 or 2-1 or something like that. We're going okay. Anyway, I saw the ball being played to the person that kicked me, and he was kind of had his back to me. So he was facing his own goal. I said, oh, he's going to kick now. He's going to make attempt to tackle for the ball, but he's going to get on the back of his heel or whatever else, like that, or his calf. And just as I did that, I was as about sliding in, and it was a mucky day. Just as I was sliding in, one of our players came across. I caught him around the calf knee area. He goes sideways. The fellow was supposed to kick past the ball. He's gone by the two of us. I'm on the ground after kicking my own player, and then he gets taken off afterwards because he's injured. And I said, oh, jeez. Well, the day tackle came, we can tell you. So, that will cost us. But that, he was, and I wouldn't mind, this player was there for about 6 weeks afterwards. So that was it. Yeah, there was mad times.
Yeah, mad. Well, that Bowes team that you played in at the start was a great team. You won the league title twice while you were there. Talk to us a little bit about that team and how good it was and what made them so good.
Well, they were like I said to you, you know, you come across a good group of people, and I've been lucky in life about people I've come across in teams. And these were great lads. We had Amy Gregg that was there. Mick Smith was in goal. Mick had played international. Johnny Fulham, Joe Bourke. We had Borg O'Connor, Porrig O'Connor. We had, who else would we have? We have, then obviously, as I said, Turlock and John. We had the Count as well, played for as well. And he was a very, very talented player. We had... But we had decent side, and we, in fairness to Billy Young, he was very, very good. Jerry was playing, Jerry Ryan played at the time. Kevin wasn't in as much, but Jerry at that time, he was playing on the left side, and Jerry was having it. Jerry was one of the most talented players, and he was not only a talented player, he was like a gazelle. He could run all day, right foot, left foot. Fantastic, and scored some great goals. But he died there a few years ago, Jerry Ryan, and I miss him still, because he was a great friend. He had a bad time, unfortunately. He played for Ireland, he played for Brighton, he played for Newcastle. Who else did he play for? But he was great. He was great, and he came in that year, and we were very lucky. Things went well for us, and and we got to play a few European games. But the club itself was brilliant at the time. You know, Bowes was a fantastic club. I know when the rivalries between Rovers and Bowes, I used to get a bit of stick, but sure, look, that's the way it was. But I enjoyed every minute at Bowes. No, obviously, because you enjoyed them, obviously, because you're successful, and we were lucky to be successful. And but the people you meet there, and the people that were looked after us at Bowls, they were fantastic. And then to play, as I said, to play on Daily Mount every second week was another help, you know. But Billy Young was brilliant at bringing people in. He had Mick Bourne, that the kit man that was with the Irish team as well, with him. And there was a lot of, he would sign a lot of young players and bring them through. And there's been a lot of players over the years that owe great debt to Billy for doing them the start in football, you know.
Yeah. Talk to us a little bit about Billy as well, because he's not only a Bowes legend, but a League of Ireland legend, incredibly long period at Bowes, etc. What was he like as a manager, and what did he give you as a team that helped you flourish?
Well, unfortunately, I was at his funeral there a few weeks ago, and the amount of people I saw around that was that he had brought into football. He was brilliant to what he did. He signed you because he wants you to play in a particular position, and that was it. He didn't want you to play anywhere else. He wants you to play in that particular position, and he had a great confidence in you to say, "Well, okay, you're quite capable of doing that." And you know, you're playing with better players here too. They'll bring out the best in you, and then once you adhere to what we've asked you to do, well, that'll be great, you know. And there was only one occasion where he gave out to me. Well, two occasions, sorry. But
did it have anything to do with you and your own player?
Thank you. That was different. That was a different club, actually. But it was he was always very, very strict about, you know, training and how you played and how you looked and everything else like that. And we were training one day, and we had weather like we've had over the last few weeks. It was scorching hot. It was beautiful. The ground was rock hard, and he still expected to wear, you know, molded studs, or I hadn't got molded studs, I only had kind of steel studs. So I wore runners one day, and we were doing the running and doing all these things. And he said, "What are you wearing there?" I said, "Get them off. You go back." He said, "Don't you ever come out here in those again?" I said, "What's wrong with them?" He said, "If you slip, you could pull your hamstring. You could do this, you know. You don't play with runners." I says, "I know, but it's really hard. It doesn't matter. Get in, change." That was it. So he gave out to me for that, you know. And I didn't mind, you know, but he was very fair to you. But the only other time he gave out to me was, we used to train in Grange Gorman, and we trained there on the Saturday morning, 10 o'clock, finished about 12, half 12. And then I used to go and play Gaelic for Good Council. Now, I was a professional at the time, but I wanted to play all sports. So I remember we were going to somewhere the next day, and he found out, and he read the Riot Act to me. He says, "You could get injured in the Gaelic." But because Jerry, myself, and Kevin went to play Good Council, he didn't know at the time, you know. And he had to head off the three of us anyway. We were lucky to be even playing that next day. But that was the only time he gave out to me, you know. But he was a lovely man. But he signed some great players. Like Jack McDonough there is another player that, you know, he's not well at the moment. Jack had a stroke last year, a few years ago. But he's brought so many, you know, Gino Lawless, fantastic player as well. You know, Rocky O'Brien. You could go to loads and loads of, you know, Terry Everson, players like that. He was brilliant at bringing people through.
What kind of manager was he? Was he great at tactics, or was he a great man motivator? And that's what he got through. How did he set his teams up?
As I said, Ken, he was like Jim McLaughlin in that respect. He kind of set teams up with the right type of players, in the right positions. And you know, but he wanted to play football. He was all about getting the ball down and playing, and you know. It wasn't just kind of knock it along or things like that and get after it. It was controlled, and he was. That's what he wanted. That was the way he wanted to play. But he had a great way of kind of, you know, motivating people and, you know, getting the best out of people. And even if you were going through a bad time, he would be very supportive of you. And but he also had such a big squad that the pressure was on you to perform every week, and if you didn't perform, you were, you know, you got the hook. That was it. And he made no bones of that, and that included everybody. But he had also great leaders in Johnny Fulham and Turlough O'Connor, Joe Bourke. So he had really, really good leaders there, and that was what kind of made the side.
You win another league, and you win the FAI Cup as well with Bowes, in a kind of this kind of short space of a window while you're at the club. Did that kind of help, that kind of breed that kind of success into you, that not just about, you know, isn't it great to win cups and stuff like that, etc., but also, I suppose, the work ethic and the managerial side of things that need to go into having winning teams and winning leagues and winning cups, and that the glory is great, but it's the hard work behind it that actually makes everything function going forward.
Yeah, that's a very good point, actually. Yeah, that's what it does. I probably got installed in me kind of very early age with my manager, Noel Quinn. He was a devil for making sure you were as fit as you could be, as organized as you could be, even at, like, this is at 15, 16 years of age. And he always instilled that, like, you know, just be honest. That's the most important thing. Give everything you have. And, you know, if that's not good enough, at least you can look in the mirror and say, well, look, I did the best I could. I may not have achieved what I want to achieve, but at least I gave it, you know. And I always say that to players, that, you know, if you're honest with yourself, you'll go a long way, because, you know, you'll see what's wrong with yourself. You see what you're probably not doing well, and you'll just do your best to make it better. And once you do that, I think, you know, that's what I've always said to players, like, just give yourself the best chance you can. And if it works out, fine. If it doesn't, well, look, as I said, you can look in the mirror and say, well, look, I did everything good. Maybe I wasn't good enough, and that's fine.
Is that something that perhaps stuck to you in your career as well? And perhaps something that even now professional footballers tend to forget, that you need, sometimes you need to have a conversation with yourself, and it's not necessarily your teammates around you, but to be able to look in the mirror, as you say, and say, look, do you know, what are you doing here? Is this good enough? Do you know, is this the way you want to play? And being able to have that conversation with yourself rather than your team.
Yeah, it is. I think every person, you know, you have to have, you can't be with people 24/7. So you have to kind of just give them information, and it depends which way they digest it and take it forward. The biggest thing to me was getting knocks back. I mean, everything wasn't rosy. I went for a trial at 15 years of age with Jerry out to UCD. And it's for the international under 15s. And I scored 2 goals that day. And I knew I did fairly okay. And I didn't get picked on the Monday. The squad was put out for the team to play. I don't know who they were playing, but I wasn't on it. And that was the biggest shock to me in my life. And it still rankles me, because I knew I did okay. And I always remember coming back with Jared, and we're on the bus coming home. He said, Jesus, you're lucky. You should be in for, you're okay for next week. And, like, we were doing well in Rangers, and we were top of the league, and we had a good side, and we were probably winning the league. And then on the Monday, when I was an apprentice compositor, and I went to work, and I got the independent off one of the men and to see, you know, was he in it? And I wasn't. And that to me was the biggest shock I ever had in my life. And I remember going into the toilet, into the job and crying. And I always remember. And that, I always said to myself from that day onwards, I hope that never happens to me again, you know. So, because sometimes the knockbacks, you've just got to, you know, get on with it. But I knew something, and there was something wrong there somewhere. And I was always worried then afterwards of people saying, is it the best team you're picking, or is people you're picking because you know them, or whoever, or the influence of other people? I always said to myself, I would never pick anybody, be influenced by anyone. But I always pick people based on what they do. Mm. And that's what I've always, and I used to find the hardest as a manager was to pick people, you know, out of 18, pick 11 people to start the game, because everybody had done exactly the same. They contributed everything. And the hardest bit was to kind of lead people out. Mm. And I got left out that time, and that was the biggest hurt I ever had. And it was probably, in some ways, it was one thing, probably pushed me forward and made me hungrier, I suppose.
And you had a great successful time at Bohemians, and then you find yourself in the United States with Philadelphia Fury. Where does that come from, and how did you end up playing football in America in the 1970s?
I was actually supposed to be going to Fulham, would you believe?
Really?
Yeah, I played against Pats on a Wednesday, and the scout and Billy and myself had a cup of tea afterwards, and we're talking about going to, you know, Fulham and things like that, everything else. And I was all delighted and everything else. And then there was an embargo put in to Fulham. And I said, geez, this is not going to happen for me, you know. So he said, look, he had a connection with Arsenal and with America and things like that. He said, look, America is getting big and blah, blah, blah. Would you be interested? I said, well, yeah, no problem whatsoever. I'll give it a go. And so I said, look, whatever happens, happens, you know. So anyway, they came back with an agreement with Bose and asked me would I be happy to go. And I said, yeah, everything else I'd asked, and it turned out great. So made the decision to go to Philadelphia. So it was weird. It was great. It was different.
I suppose was it kind of like Wolves as well, because you're 22, you're an Irishman who's young, who's 22, he's going to this country that everybody talks about, that dreams about. You know, obviously the Irish connection in the States is massive as well. You know, that we've always had that kind of connection in the States as well. So the States was always this kind of big kind of wow place to kind of find yourself up in. Did you feel that way when you got there, or what was it like playing football in the States?
I was a fright in my life, was,
really?
I remember coming in, and we flew in, and we did a Statue of Liberty. I've never seen that, and I said, Jesus Christ, this is huge. Everything was big. And what am I going to get around here? What are we going to do here, you know? And it was over the top, to say the least. Got there anyway, and I remember there being there first day, and I was with my wife and my wife to be, and we had us in the apartment and everything else like that, and we were in the same complex of all our lads, a place called Camden, New Jersey, and those shops and everything else down from us. So we decided, we got there late during the night, the next day we were hungry, we said, geez, I have to get something to eat. So we were talking about pizzas and things like that. So saw this pizza place, and it's nice, and we went there, you know. So two of us go in, and starving, yeah, okay. Give us two large pizzas and two Cokes there, please, will you? Okay. And a woman looks at me and says, two large pizzas, sir. And I says, yeah, two large pizzas, please, yeah, please, thank you. Yeah. You sure, sir? And I says, yeah, I'm starving. So, something to eat, you know. So anyway, she said, well, do you mind? I'll just come back out, you know. She came back out. So, this big tray, the size of it, my Jesus. would have fed about six families. And sir, this is a large one. It was the smallest one you have, please.
Everything's bigger in America.
I swear to God, everything is bigger. I've just seen a bit of that story now, and I kind of say that. So anyway, you're kind of bored anyway.
So how did you end up at Philadelphia then? Did you, or what was it like? Because I know in the 70s there was, you know, there's a big push for soccer in the States, etc. And some of the greatest players of all time were finding and playing their trade in the States as well. So how did you find yourself playing in that kind of arena?
Yeah, it was weird I was so lucky as well. The same thing in the complex we had. Johnny Giles had signed. That's and and he was so helpful to me. His wife, Anne, they were just beautiful people. And they were so helpful to us. Plus, Alan Ball was there. We had John, it's John's second name. We had about five or six players. Alan Ball there as well, too. It was unbelievable. And Peter,
Peter Osgood.
He was there as well. And it was just, as I said, it was unreal. It was like playing. It was like fantasy football. That's what it was like, actually. Because we go to the stadium then next day, and you see this big stadium, and you see the top of it, and then we go in, and we get an elevator down about four floors, to the dressing room. You know what I mean? And I said, geez, nice hotel, this place. It's a lovely hotel, it's right. And he go out again, and here's this big AstroTurf pitch. And it's huge. I mean, the stadium is huge. It holds about 100,000 people. And this is for the Phillies to play there. The Phillies football team, they play there. And, oh, my God, it's just unreal. And we go into the dressing room, well, the locker room, if they call it, you know, the locker room, and they go in there. And the place is huge because for the American football, I think there's about 40 fellas in each game or something like that, you know. Yeah, so it was like, the place is huge, and this is unreal. And then we come out, and you look up, and you're saying, like, as you said there, it was all fantasy football. You're going to wait and some of the pinch to wake up and get a grip of yourself, you know. But we sitting there, playing there, and we got to know all the players and everything else like that. And we had a good group of great group of fellas. And so we're playing all these games. And then what you would have to do if you were going out to, Miami or whatever it might be, or Memphis, when you went to play, you could be going for 2 days to a different place. Or two games, because he's so far away, that you'd have to stay over, you know. And you're trained and you played in all these beautiful places, and like Tampa was incredible. They were mad into the football. And then we went to New York, and we played against Chinaglia and Beckenbauer and people like that. And you're kind of saying, "Jesus!" But I made a big mistake in New York, because I put the ball to. Anyway, we played that game anyway, and Beckenbauer, as I've said, I put it to his legs. And that was the worst thing I should have done, because I didn't get a kick off after that. But he was there. They were brilliant. But that stadium, there was 60,000 people at that match that day, and it was just incredible. But all the razzmatazz that went with it, it was kind of. It was funny, but it's brilliant the way he kind of presented the game, for a better word.
Yeah, it's that American kind of, I suppose, ethos that goes through all their sports, every single sport that they play, where it's a show. You put on a show. It's entertainment as well as the sport.
That's exactly what it is, Ken. That's the best way of putting it, because it was a show, and it was just unbelievable. It was fantastic. And it's great now. Like, you're going out and you're playing there and you're playing in this environment, and you say, this is unbelievable. But it was like fantasy football. We were owned by the Rolling Stones. And after every game, you got the elevator up to the fifth floor or whatever it might be. And here was all food laid out, all drinks, whatever you wanted, caterers, everything. It was just it was a different world, probably the best way to describe it. It was a little bit different from being in Rat Banner or somewhere like that.
I was just about to say, it's a far cry from a rainy night in Daly Mount Park on a Saturday, is it?
It was. What I'm thinking about it now, actually, is when you bring it up like that, yeah, some of the things, it's just right.
And that must have been an incredible experience to play against some of those great players, you know, of all times as well. And I suppose it was great to have Johnny Giles there too, who's obviously a fellow Irishman, but you know, arguably our finest, one of our finest footballers in our history, to be there with you and, you know, to take those kind of experiences that he had at Leeds as well, and kind of work them into that kind of experience too for you.
I couldn't thank him enough, to be honest with you, because he was such a great help to me. And I got a stress fracture. I was there for 2 months. I got this bit of a stress fracture. It wasn't too bad, but I had to ease off for a while. And then when I came back, I had to do extra training. And he would stay back and look after me to make sure I did, you know, to help me with my training, because I needed people playing the ball and things like that. Mm. And John used to stay behind and help me out. And you know, when you look back, and I've thanked him enough over the years, but he was a great help to us. You know, he'd seen it all before. Mm. Nothing fazed him. And then not only that, he would put you right in games. You know, he'd tell you little smaller things, and he just relayed them to you and say, Pat, you know, you're a bit forward there, look back there a little bit, or whatever it might be, you know. And he was great in that respect. He would kind of, you know, see the whole game, take it into account, and put you in the best position to play, you know. Mm. He was great. Brilliant. But he didn't do that just with me, he did that with everybody. He was so helpful.
Yeah, and I talked to Owen Hand as well in that previous podcast before, because he worked under Giles at Rovers and things like that as well. But he said kind of Johnny never wasn't a big one for, he didn't shout at people, he didn't shout and scream and all that kind of stuff.
No.
But he always explained something to you. Do you know, he never got irate about something. If he was mad about something or he disagreed with something, he'd always explain why he was feeling that way.
Absolutely. And like he'd put it aside, even, you know, maybe, you know, even if someone said there was a stop and play or everything else like that, he said, look, you're a little bit forward there, step back there, that'd be a better position for going forward, or else tuck back in here, I'll be going forward, just tuck in behind me, whatever it might be. And simple things, but yeah, so effective. And, you know, they stood with me for the rest of my life. You know, it's little simple things that he said to me, and just, you know, it made the game easier. You know, because of, you know, his knowledge and things like that. And he's even helped out over the last few months involved with the Benevolent Fund. Mm. And John, Liam Brady and Mike Quinn were fantastic for the gig in Vicar Street. So, yeah. You know, I've seen him even now. He's still helpful to people. He's helped so many people along the way, you know, and Liam Brady be one of them as well. So, because he's so much faith in him, but a great man, absolutely fantastic.
Short kind of stint in Philadelphia, is that right? Were you there for a year, less than a year?
Yeah, about a year. Yeah, that's it. We went back, and I think the Rolling Stones are running out of money, and they both fell for a bit. So it was kind of they tried it, and
all
it didn't
all that
work.
Money they spent on the catering, was it?
It was, and other things as well, I think. And it was, as I said, fancy. Should they get me a new car when I went over there? I was driving a Fiat 850. I had a Fiat 850 here, and went over, and they gave me a brand new Toyota Celica GTI liftback. I get this car, and it's only 15 miles, in it, and I said, oh my God. It was just unreal. It was just, you know what I mean? And so things like that, it was, they, in fairness, they were very good. It was trying to help it, trying to push it forward, but it just didn't work at that time.
You come back home then, and do you play with Shelburne for a while, or are you training with them, or?
Yeah, I was training with them. And I got an offer then to go to Leicester, and because I played against with Bowes, I played against Rangers 2 years earlier, year earlier, before I went to Philadelphia, and Jock Wallace was the manager at the time in Rangers, but he'd gone then to Leicester. So Martin Henderson, a lad that played me in Philadelphia, was going there, and he mentioned me to him, and Jock had asked, mentioned to me, and so he asked me would I go along and have a chat with him and things like that. So that's how that worked out. I went to Leicester then, and it was a fantastic time. Yeah,
you did again. You found yourselves in a great position at Leicester as well. Am I right in saying you won the second division title?
That's right, that's right, Academy, And
what was that like as well? Not just to play kind of English football, but also to be playing English football and winning a league title as well.
Yeah, it was brilliant because it was loads of different things to it. It was we went in there and didn't know what to expect, to be honest with you. But to be honest, I did okay. But you know when you don't believe in yourself enough, and it was one thing that always stood me. I kind of said to myself, I could have done better there, you know, sort of way. And I did okay. Don't get me wrong, I did okay. But we had a great season. And another thing as well, too, a great set of lads. They were brilliant. But the manager was brilliant also. He's the same thing as well. And I think if you've got a good manager and he speaks to you honestly and tells you the truth, you know, you respond. And he brought me in, and he put me in the side, and he had faith in me to play. So it was good. But I was playing on the wing at the time, and I'd rather play the midfield, but Vegas can't be choosers. I was just glad to be playing. But we had a great run, and we had a good few players. Eddie Kelly, that played for Arsenal, he was there. We had...
A very young man by the name of Gary Lineker was there too.
Yeah, Gary came in. Gary took my place, actually. That's a thing I had with him. But Gary came in, yeah. And Jesus, when you saw how quick he was, Gary was, he'd catch pigeons. he was so quick. But the guy saying about his control wasn't brilliant. He'd actually miscontrolled the ball. But because the defender was so close, and Gary would be gone away then, you know, he wouldn't catch him. And his finishing was very good. And there was a good few young players come in that time too. And another, like Billy Young, Jock had a belief in young players. And we had a good lot of senior lads.
It was a squad as well that had that almost entirely made up of what you might call the home nations type of.
Yeah.
It was England. John O'Neill was there from Northern Ireland as well. Host of Scottish and English players. So it was very much a team made up of homegrown players as well.
And it was just a great group of lads. You couldn't say Martin Henderson did quite well. Alan, he was from Scotland as well. In memory. But we had a decent side, and Eddie Kelly was a big help in that, you know what I mean? And Bobby Smith, they were great. We had a great run, and when we got promoted, it was unbelievable. But Jack Wallace taught me an awful lot of things at that time too. He was, when we won the league, we had a great celebration afterwards, and we all went to the Holiday Inn. it was a big thing. The wives were coming, girlfriends, everything. All the staff was there, all the whole people in the club was there. And I always remember going in and in the whole day, and we went, we were kind of on this level floor, and then there's a big stage type area. And it was all set out lovely and gorgeous and everything else. And anyway, you know, we get to our seats and we're all sitting down below, and all the seats up here then, and all of a sudden Jock Wallace calls all the people out for the top tables. And all the people up there were people that cleaned your beer, people that made the food, people that did painted the walls or whatever it might be. And it was the biggest, it was a great learning curve for me, because it was about how treating people. And he says, the club, these are the big part of the club. Players will come and go, but these people here will always be here to look after the club. And that saddens me, because when I see what's happening with Man United at the moment and the staff they had there, and to let people go like that, it's that to me is terrible, because they've probably been there most of their lives, and all of a sudden then your man comes in and kind of lets them all go, you know? And then there's not even a ticket for them to go to the match tomorrow night. I think that's wrong. I mean, see, I know if you are stuck for money, that's fine, but I can't see them stuck that much for maybe 100 people, really, you know? Sad.
I think it's something, and it particularly in the League of Ireland, I think it's incredibly important, because, you know, what the clubs need people who give, you know, bonkers amount of their time to volunteer, let alone even, you know, getting any money for it. But people who love their local club, from, you know, Finn Harps down to, you know, Wexford and Cork, and, you know, across the country, you know, and when those people go, the knowledge and the stories that have been around for their tenure, they go as well. And that's a loss. It's a big loss to a club.
Absolutely. You know, those people used to be the biggest. They would stay in my head more so than players. The people, the staff that would be in clubs, the amount of time and effort they give to, you know, that club is unbelievable. Mick Cairns comes to the head to me. I don't know whether you know Mick Cairns, but Mick Cairns is huge in Shamrock Rovers. Mad Shamrock Rovers person. I remember when we got the plot of land from South Dublin County Council, and I was floating on air at the time when I came out, and they give us this plot of land where we are at the moment, where the stadium is now at the moment. And I remember coming out there, and the first person I rang was Mick Cairns, because he was such, he just loved Shamrock Rovers. And to get the news that we'd have an opportunity to get a ground was fantastic. So rang Mick, and he couldn't believe it, you know. And we had to go up and do a few tests on the ground, and Mick came with me. And but people like that, people throughout, you know, the League of Ireland, people that I've seen in Bowles there last year, and there's people still working there all these years later, and they're crediting themselves. And you couldn't run, League of Ireland couldn't be run without these people. That's all important.
Well, that's it for this week's episode of Green Shoots, A History of Irish Football. Part 2 of this fascinating interview with Pat Byrne will be out in a few days, so make sure you subscribe to the podcast on Spotify, Apple, Amazon Music, YouTube, and a host of other platforms so you do not miss it. Share the show on your social media channels to let more people know about the history and heritage of Irish football. And remember to support your local League of Ireland and Northern Ireland Football League team. It's our heritage, it's our game. Until the next time, in a few days, bye for now.